Good morning. What I'd like to do with you this morning is to share a journey that I began trying to understand the role of women in Hanukkah. It led me to explore exactly who these women were and became an article that I just produced for Hanukkah to Go, so you can read more about that there. We'll touch upon some of the ideas this morning. But on the way to discovering who these women were, I began to be also interested in, because of these women, how does that impact on our obligation for Nerot Hanukkah, and in addition, some of the many other minhagim that have arisen over the years that are specific to women. So I'd like to take you on that journey today to try and understand specifically why we like Nerot Hanukkah, what are the other minhagim that we do, and then to bring it back to how it connects to these women. So in order to start our journey, I'll ask you to look at the source sheets, and we're going to first discover or rediscover what are our obligation towards mitzvot in general, because that will then segue into the specific laws of Hanukkah. And I'm looking at source number one, the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Kol mitzvot haben al ha'av, ha'anashim chayavim, v'hanashim turot. Any of the obligations that a father has for a son, he has for the men, but not for the women. Kol mitzvot ha'av al haben, echad anashim ve'echad nashim chayavim. Mitzvot that a child has towards the father, men and women are obligated in a similar fashion. And this is where we get to the crux of the issue. Kol mitzvot haseh shazman grama, hanashim chayavim v'anashim turot. Any positive mitzvah that is time-related, men are obligated, women are patur. V'chol mitzvot aseh shelo hazman grama, echad anashim v'echad nashim chayavim. If it's a positive mitzvah that is not related to time, men and women are obligated. V'chol mitzvot aseh belo ta'aseh ben shazman grama, uven shelo hazman grama, echad anashim v'echad nashim chayavim. And if it's a negative mitzvah, one that we're not allowed to do, men and women share in that obligation equally. But already the Mishnah, in its concluding statement, is going to give us an exception to the rule. There are three mitzvot lo ta'aseh that fall only on men and are not obligated on women. And the Mishnah concludes, chutz mibal takif, umibal tashlit, umibal titamel mitim. Women are not obligated in the same way men are about not shaving their payas, their beards, just in case you wanted to. And for women kohanim, they are not allowed to become tamei met. In other words, they are allowed to become tamei met and go to funerals and go to cemeteries. So right away we see that this klal, this general principle, is not applied equally across the board. What about with the mitzvot aseh? Are there similar limitations? Is it that some of the mitzvot aseh women are not obligated to do? And some of the mitzvot aseh shazman grama, women might be obligated to do as well. The Gemara in Kiddushin is going to take up this line of argument. Kol mitzvot aseh shazman grama v'chule. Tanu Rabbanan, ezo mitzvot aseh shazman grama. First of all, the Gemara is going to give us examples of the quintessential mitzvot aseh shazman grama and list them. Sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzit, utfilin. Ve'ezo hi mitzvot aseh shelo hazman grama, mezuzah, ma'akeh, avedah, v'shiluach haken. What are some examples of positive mitzvot not time-related? Putting a mezuzah, building a fence around a balcony, returning a lost object, and sending away the mother bird before taking the eggs. The klalahu, and the Gemara asks, is this really a principle that can be extended? If it's mitzvot aseh, women do have to do it. If it's shazman grama, they don't. Hare matza simcha hakel, the mitzvot aseh shazman grama, v'nashim chayavot. Right away, the Gemara lists us several mitzvot that are positive and time-bound, and women are obligated. For example, eating matzah on Pesach. For example, the mitzvah to be happy on Chagim. For example, the mitzvah of Hakel, going to Yerushalayim the seventh year during Shemitah to hear the Melech read from Sefer Devarim. And what about the opposite? Vitu, Hare Talmud Torah, Piri of Arivia, Vipidona Ben, Dilav mitzvah taseh shazman grama, hu, v'nashim turot. And the Gemara lists three mitzvot aseh that are not time-related, but yet women are not obligated in performing them. For example, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. For example, the mitzvah of Purvu, and the last example, the mitzvah of performing Pidyon Haben. Rav Yochanan Amar, Ein Lemadin Min HaKlalot, Klalot, and Rav Yochanan says, and you can't learn from general principles. And perhaps Rav Pinchas Kahati of the Mishneh Kahati fame puts it better, and this source you don't have, I'm just going to read the last line. Shishnei HaKlalim Halalu Einam Dafka, the Kavanatan LaRov HaMitzvot V'lo LaKulan. The idea that Nashim are patur from Mitzvot HaSeh Shazman Grama, and obligated in other Mitzvot HaSeh, and possibly obligated in not doing the law to aseh, is a general principle, and as with everything else in life, the exception will always prove the rule. So we have the idea that if it's a mitzvah aseh shazman grama, our inclination is to state that women are patur. Does this hold for the mitzvah Chanukah? Why would we even have a question that Chanukah would be different from the mitzvah that are listed here? Anyone? That's going to be the answer. She'afen ayubanez is going to be part of it, but why would we even have a question whether or not women are obligated? In what way is Chanukah different from all the others? It's not deraisa. The question is, are we obligated in mitzvot aseh shazman grama that are derabanan or not? So going with it that we might not be, we're now going to look at why specifically for Chanukah we are going to be. Okay, so that comes to another idea that's going to tie in with matzah, and I'm going to say the same principle for both of those. The underlying principle for that is kol sheyeshno bebal, yeshno ba'aseh. Anything that you have an aseh and a lo ta'aseh bound together, two sides of the same coin, because we're not allowed to do the lo ta'aseh, we are obligated to do the aseh. So Nerot Shabbat is the same idea as Kiddush Yom, and it's all tied into the fact of the lo ta'aseh, lo ta'aseh melacha. The flip side of that is kadeshet yom ha-shabbat. So because we can't do melacha on Shabbos, we are obligated in the kiddush. The same thing with matzah, because achilat matzah, eating matzah, is connected to lo tochal chametz, because we're not allowed to eat chametz, we are obligated to also eat matzah. It's not going to apply to another very famous mitzvah on Pesach, which is Arba Kosot, which is Darabanan, which I discovered when, almost 25 years ago, my firstborn was born Erev Pesach, and I had to figure out what I had to do in the hospital, and I was told, matzah, yes, you know, the Kosot were Darabanan. Either way, I raced through the Seder, but that's... I'm not going to pass it, I'm going to check, but certainly we're obligated in here in Kiddush. So that's not, and that's going to be the flip side. So the rest of the Gemara that I didn't go into is going to try and figure out what it's based on, and they start a whole limud from Tefillin, and Tefillin from Talmud Torah, because Talmud Torah is only for boys. Tefillin is only for boys, and they go through the whole limud in that way. There's a reason I didn't want to get into that today, because it was going to take us very far off topic. I will even, at the cost of sounding very risque, all the mitzvot that are listed in the beginning as mitzvot aseh shazman grama, you will notice that with many of them, there's not a controversy about whether we're allowed to do it or not. Sukkah, we eat in the sukkah, and if you're Ashkenazi, you will make a bracha as you sit in the sukkah. Sfardi, Yot, don't. The same with lulav. Shofar is even more than we're just allowed to. Women have taken it upon themselves to come to shul to hear shofar. So it's interesting that of the mitzvot listed as quintessential mitzvot aseh shazman grama, nobody seems to have a problem with us doing most of them. Tefillin and tzitzit remain a question on the side. But let's go back to Nerot Chanukah and slightly less controversial topics at this point. So we have the idea that perhaps we shouldn't be obligated in mitzvot Ner Chanukah because it is connected to mitzvot aseh shazman grama. Why then are they obligated? And if you look at sources 5, 6, and 7, they're all authored by the same Amora, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who was actually an Amora who lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was first born in Lod and then had a yeshiva in Tveria towards the end of his life. What's interesting, if he's a Yerushalmi, or from Talmud Yerushalmi, what is he doing in the Batli? He went to Bava at one point and His statements are now being recorded. And he's going to say basically the same thing in three different locations. Va'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot ba'arba kosot halalu, she'av hen hayu ba'oto hanes. In Masechet Pesachim, he notes that women have to drink the dalad kosot. Va'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'mikra Megillah, she'av hen hayu ba'oto hanes. And Masechet Megillah, he notes that women have to hear the Megillah. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'ner Chanukah, she'av hen hayu ba'oto hanes. And in Masechet Shabbat, he notes that women have to light the Hanukkah candles as well. And if you are wondering why it is found in Masechet Shabbat and not in Masechet Chanukah, the answer is there is no Masechet Chanukah. Just like we don't have a Megillah that we read, there is a separate Makkabim that provides some of the historical background for some of our Minhagim, believe it or not. But there is no Masechet, there is no Mishnah Chanukah, so from a discussion of Nerot Shabbat came the discussion of Nerot Chanukah. So women are obligated, and the phrase that reverberates is Av Hen Hayigu Ba'oto Hanes. That is the reason we have to perform each one of these three mitzvot. Hold on, we're going to get there. It's actually in one of the sources to come. Before we hop to Sukkah, let's see if we can figure out what these three mitzvot have in common. And the mitzvot are, again, are Dalet Kosot, Mikra Megillah, and Ner Chanukah. So the first and most obvious is, with each one, the phrase exists, Av Hen Hayu Ba'oto Hanes. Fine. What else can you tell me that these three mitzvot have in common? That they're based on the miracle, and our performing of them is in recognition of Pirsumei Nisa. Good. What else? We said something about them earlier. They're all Derabanan. And the last thing, I'm going to say something, and I want you to catch me in what you are going to feel is wrong, that they each have the bracha with them that's recited, She'asa Nisim La'avotenu. Arba Kosot doesn't. Okay, what does the Dalet Kosot have in place? It's really the same idea of She'asa Nisim. Not so, think of a bracha. Asher Ga'alanu V'Ga'al Et Avotenu Mimitzrayim. That's really the essence of what She'asa Nisim is all about. So with each three of these mitzvot, they're all derabanan. We're all saying Av Hen Hayu Ba'oto Hanes. Women were included in the miracle. The essence of each one of these mitzvot is to highlight the miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done for us, and we recite She'asa Nisim or Asher Ga'alanu to somehow frame this mitzvah and to really recognize that that's why we are doing it. What does it mean then, Av Hen Hayu Be'oto Hanes? And we're going to see Rashi to help explain to us in what way were women involved. The options are either they were part of the Gzeirah in the beginning, something bad was going to happen to them, and the fact that they were saved now makes them part of the miracle and they have to recognize that as well. Or the flip side, that they were actually involved in bringing around the Geulah, Av Hen Hayu Ba'nes. They were part of the Nes, actualizing it. And let's see which way Rashi takes it. She'av Hen Hayu Ba'oto Hanes, I'm looking now at source number 8. Kedamrinan Sota Yudalav Amud Bet, Bishar Nashim Tzidkaniya Teba'oto Hador Nig'alu. That first of all, what does it mean in terms of Pesach? That it was because of the righteous women who lived during that time. The righteous women, you could say Shifra and Pua. The righteous women, you could say Yocheved and Miriam. The righteous women, you could say Miriam on her own later on for the role that she had. The righteous women who used to take their copper mirrors and sit under the trees to make sure that the Pruervu continued, that the next generation was born. All of these are possible for the righteous women. I even saw in a B'nai Sashar listing Batya, Bat Paro, is one of the righteous women, Be'oto Hador. So because of them and because of the role that each one had, we now are chayev in Dalet Kosot as well. V'chan gabe mikra Megillah, nami aminan hachidi mishum de'al yedei Esther nigalu. What about mikra Megillah with Purim? That again, through Esther, the Geula came about, and that is why we are now obligated to hear the Megillah. V'chan gabe ner Chanukah b'Masechet Shabbat. And it just tells us, oh, also with Chanukah, as it says in Masechet Shabbat. Let's keep going with the other Rashis and see if we can flesh out a little bit some of our understanding. Rashi in Megillah, Av Hen Hayu Ba'oto Hanes. שאח על הנשים גזר המן להשמיד, להרוג ולאבד, מנער ועד זקן טף נשים. We see the other side, not the fact that Esther was involved in bringing the gula, but that women were involved in the gzeirah. They were going to be killed. The fact that they were not killed makes them part of the nes, and that is why they are obligated to remember the miracle as well. And on the Nerot Hanukkah, the Rashi, on Masechet Shabbat, Hayu Be'oto HaNes, Shegazru Yevanim Al Kol Betulot HaNesuot Lihibael L'Tfesar Tchila Ve'al Yedei Isha Naseh HaNes. And here we see both sides brought together as one, that in what way were women part of the Gzeirah, that all maidens, before their wedding day, or the night before their wedding, they had to first appear in front of the Greek ruler at the time, the Duo de Senor, and spend their wedding night first with him. Ve'al yedei isha naseh hanes, and an allusion to this anonymous woman that helped bring about the miracle. So when I asked which one was it, is it because they were involved in the gzeirah, or they were involved in bringing about the geula, really Rashi seems to hold all of the above. And we can see how these stories came out. We're going to look in a little bit exactly what the story was with the Tfesar, but before we get there, let's just go to the Tosfot in Pesachim. I'm skipping 11 and looking at source number 12 to try and understand Av Hayu Banes, Hayu Boto Hanes. And Tosfot is going to quote a Rashbam, Perush Rashbam, She'al Yadam Nigalu, V'chen Me'Megila Al Yedei Esther, U'b'chanukah al yedei Yehudit. So looking at Masechet Pesachim, that they were redeemed Pesach time through women, and in Purim time through Esther, and in Hanukkah time through Yehudit, here giving us a name of a woman. The kasheh de'af mashma she'enan ikar. That af is implying that they weren't as important, that it's on a lesser level. Ve'od b'Yerushalmi gari she'af hen hayu ba'oto safek, and the Yerushalmi is learning that maybe af is a safek, that whether they were in the same sort of danger, lahashmid laharog ulabed, to be annihilated. And this is where we get to the sukkah question, that they should be obligated in the sukkah if we're understanding the same idea of av hen hayu boto hanes. Sukkah, however, is de'oraita, and we're not going to say the same phrase for de'oraita mitzvah. We are going to say it for the de'rabanan. So it might have made sense to say so for sukkah as well, but it's going to be knocked down, and we're not going to apply it to women in that case. Why still the question about our obligation in Hanukkah? Wouldn't it have been obvious that we were involved in the Gzeirah as well? When we think about Hanukkah, we have to think of two different things that were happening to Bnei Israel at the same time. Number one was the Gzeirot Antiochus against our religion, not allowing us to perform mitzvot. And the second, possibly the larger, though downplayed even more, was the idea of the war. If we think about the war, if we think about the milchama, why would women not have been included in that one? They weren't soldiers, they weren't fighting. So we have to actually go out of our way to show af hen hayu ba'oto hanes, to include them, because the greater of the miracles, really, that such a small army was able to conquer the larger Greek army, wouldn't have involved them as well. Wasn't it enough, the Gzeirot Hashmad, in terms of the Gzeirot Antiochus, not to have our religious freedom? If you look for a second, jump to source 16, the Mishnah Brura. It's going to show us a difference, an integral difference, between Purim and Hanukkah. And he's going to do it on the words, Shelo kav'um lemishteh v'simcha, ela lahalel ulahodot. That on Purim, we have a mitzvah of making a mishteh. On Hanukkah, we have a mitzvah of halel. Why don't we have the same mitzvah of mishteh? And the Mishnah Berurah is going to continue. V'nirei ha'tam de'lo kavu kan l'simcha kimo b'Purim. The reason that we don't have a mitzvah of simcha and with it mishteh like on Purim. Ki b'Purim haya ha'gzeira l'hashmid v'laharog et ha'gufot. On Purim, it was our very lives that were at stake. Haman was set to kill us, every single one of us. Shehu bitul mishteh v'simcha. And that would be the opposite of having a mishteh and simcha. V'lo et ha-nefashot, but it wasn't necessarily for our souls. Sha'afilu himeru datam chas v'shalom, lo hamaya mekabel otam. That if we would have converted, or if we would have said we're not going to act as Jews right now, would that have saved us from gzeirat haman? No, he was still going to kill us. V'kach shehetzilam ha-kadosh baruch hu mimenu, kav'u lahalalo ulashapchot, yitbarach gam ken al yedei mishteh v'simcha. And that is why when Hashem saved us, we now commemorate this with a mishteh, with a suda. Ma she'ein ken b'maseh de Antiochus, which is not the case with what happened with Antiochus in Chanukah. She'lo gazar aleihem laharog ulahashmid. Here the gzeirah, the decree, was not for annihilation. Rak svarot ushmadot tidei lahamir datam. But simply putting negative things on, giving us negative decrees in order to cause us to convert or to give up our religion. To take away our Torah and bring us out of finding favor with God. And had B'nai Israel given in to them, had they agreed to subsidiary their tendencies to do mitzvot, ulahalot lahem mas, and to pay some sort of tributary tax to them, vechozrim le'amunatam, and to go and practice the religion of the Greeks, chas v'shalom, lo hayu mevachim yoter, they wouldn't have asked any more of us. We would have been able to technically live. Our lives were not at stake in the same way. Ela shigbir hakadosh baruch hu yad Yisrael v'nitzchum. But Hashem helped us out to go even beyond that, not to have to give us our religion, but to even fight a battle and to get rid of all of this, to be able to live freely as Jews. L'chach lo kav'um ela lahalel ulahodot. But because our lives had not been originally at stake, we don't have the mitzvah of having a sudah. Klomar kevan shehem ratzu limno otanu mizeh likfor betadochas v'shalom be'ezratu yitbarach lo hifikus mamam. So we praise Hashem and we thank Hashem that He enabled us to continue to be Oved Hashem, but our lives weren't at stake. We don't have to make the mishteh. So this further applies to the obligation of women. If our lives were not at stake in the same way, what then is our obligation? It wasn't that Haman was going to kill us the way it was in Purim. It wasn't that our lives were going to be forfeited on the battleground. So we come up with the answer already of Yehudit, of Bat Yochanan and Kohen Gadol, but we can understand where they're looking for roles that women play, either why their lives were at stake, or for the Geula that came about to help us understand what is going on and what we need to do. Before going on, let's look at some of the other customs that have evolved that involve from women and their participation. And I'm going back right now to source 14. Looking at the Shulchan Aruch under Dinei Chanukah, Seif Aleph. Bechav Hei B'Kislev, Matfilim Shmonat Yemei Chanukah. On the 25th day of Kislev, we begin to count the 8 days of Chanukah. Ve'asurim Behesved V'Ta'anit. We're not allowed to say a Hesved, we're not allowed to fast. Aval Mutarim Ba'asiyat Melacha. You're allowed to perform Melacha during these days. Ve'nohagot Hanashim Shelo La'asot Melacha. And women have a specific minhag that men don't seem to have, that during the time that the candles remain lit, they don't perform melacha. And there are those that say, we're not allowed to let the women be mekel. In other words, sit down, enjoy the candles, don't do any melacha. It's a little bit beyond the strength of even just a minhag. Lola hakel, we're supposed to be machmir on ourselves. Next minhag that seems to either evolve for women or apply to women, si'if bet. Ribui hasu'udot shemarbim bahem hem su'dat rishut. As we saw in the Mishnah Berurah, it's not a su'dat mishteh, it's not a mitzvah to have a su'dat on Chanukah, but we still have a custom to have a su'dat rishut. We're allowed to have something. Shelo kavum lemishteh v'simcha. Again, we saw the reason why it's not an official mishteh. Haga, and the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, continues for the Ashkenazic point of view. V'yesh amrim sheyesh k'tzat mitzvah b'ribui ha-sudot. Maybe there is even a mitzvah in having a lot of sudot. Mishum deba'otan hayamim haya Chanukah mizbeach maharav miprag. That because during the days of Chanukah, during the end of Kislev, that was the original time the Mizbeach had been completed. As we know, Moshe waited, Rashi talks about this in Perek Chet of Sefer Bamidbar, that he waited until much later in order to have the Chanukah to Mishkan. He waited till Rosh Chodesh Nisan to put the Mishkan into the month of Geulah, but they were really completed then. And Zecher, for that, the Ramah suggesting maybe there is a reason to have a Mishdeh. V'nohagim umar zmirot v'shvachot v'sudot shemarbim behem, and we should sing and offer praise during these sudot. V'az havi sudat mitzvah. And in this way, we're making this sudat reshut really a sudat mitzvah. V'yesh omrim, and this is the line we're really getting at, sheyesh lachol gvina b'chanukah, Lefisha hanes naase bechalav sheachila yehudit et haoyev. That we are supposed to have dairy products. We're supposed to have cheese on Hanukkah because of the milk that Yehudit fed the Oyev. And the Mishnah Brewer is quoting from the Kolbe and the Ran. The Kolbe is actually one of the earliest sources of halacha from 13th or 14th century Provence. There is no name associated with him, but I actually brought the source. You can see it in number 18. We're not going to go through that just yet. I'd rather start by looking at a source from a compilation of minhagim, of midrashim, put together by Rav Eisenstein at the beginning of the 20th century. And he's going to go into a little bit the story of Yehudit. We're used to hearing that Yehudit was the daughter of Yohanan Kohen Gadol. The source that we're going to see now was really to show two different women. One being the daughter of Yohanan Kohen Gadol, the other being an Almana Yehudit. Question? Sig, I can't hear you. What's considered malacha? I can tell you, in my house, I sit down and let the kids get ready for dinner. I'm not sure how to paskin otherwise, but it's my time to sit down and they have to do things. I think you would have to check. I don't think it's the same idea of malacha that is asura and Shabbat, but I don't know. Anyone else have an idea? Sewing? Okay, don't sew while the candles are lit. Laundry, I'm hearing, is another reason as well. I do recommend the sitting down and letting them do dinner. It's really nice. Okay, before we begin to look at Otsar HaMidrashim, yeah, the dairy. It's also mentioned in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that I brought for you. It's brought a lot. We're going to see where it's stemming from in a minute. I want to just preface this by explaining a little bit, A, about the idea Yehudit, B, the apocryphal book Yehudit, and then the daughter of Yohanan Kohen Gadol. So let's just keep in mind, when we're talking about Yehudit, it's almost as if we're talking about a Jane Doe, right? A female Jew. And a lot of the stories that revolve around women in Hanukkah, the women's names were actually anonymous. If you look at Sefer Maccabim, where one of the most famous stories, the mother with her seven sons, is known as the mother. She doesn't have a name. In later reincarnations of the story, she's known either as Hannah or as Miriam. And she's said to be the wife of a baker. There's a whole discussion, but we really don't know who she is. It's just this story that has kept coming up. There are other women mentioned in Sefer Maccabim, and I want you to keep this in mind as I'm reading from this source. One of the most famous xerot that Antiochus Gazar aleinu was not to do a brit milah. And you'll tend to think, okay, so that has to do with the men. Again, how were women involved? And there's a story of time and again where women would give birth to a baby boy, perform the brit milah on her son, and knowing that she was in danger, endangering her life by doing so, actually took a step ahead of being put to death and would jump off a cliff with her son. I'm mentioning this for two different reasons. Number one, to see how women were involved even in a mitzvah which we might not have thought they were involved in to begin with, and also to show the martyrdom that they were willing to do. I'm certainly not advocating martyrdom as a way of life, but they had a much more active resistance than we're going to see possibly than some of the men brought in the beginning of this midrash, and I think that's something very important to keep in mind. The other thing, the book of Judith describes a woman whose name is Judith, again, Yehudit, it could be this anonymous woman. She's an almanah, she's a widow. She lives in the city of Betulia, unknown city. She lives during the time when Ashur is ruling over Bnei Israel. If you look at some of the other chronological hints in the book, it really doesn't make sense historically. But note that it's not happening during the Hanukkah story. The book was most probably written around the time of the Hashmonaim, which will help explain how so much of the story gets incorporated into our celebration. But she wasn't a betulah, she was an almanah, and we're also going to see her tremendous action on behalf of Bnei Israel at a time when the men somehow seem almost paralyzed and scared to move. So that's what these two stories I want to highlight, the activeness, the willing to take a risk of the women in the face of everything that's happening around them. So if you look with me, Otsar HaMidrashim Eisenstein Hanukkah. If you look at Otsar, I haven't seen the book, I did this on the Bar Ilan, but there were a lot of different Hanukkah stories, a lot of different Hanukkah Midrashim. The reason I chose this one to present today is because it's showing the two stories, one transitioning into the other. Often you're going to see the two stories morphed into one story by itself. Tanu Rabbanan, and we're going to go through some of the history first. B'mei Malchut Yavan HaRasha'a, Gazru al Yisrael, Shekol mi sheyesh lo bariach betoch beito, yechokek alav she'en l'sonei Yisrael chelek v'nachala b'elokei Yisrael. That one of the decrees during the Greek Empire was that they put up in Israel that if you had a bariach, you had to write on the bariach, there's no place for Sonei Israel, they don't get a nachala with Elokei Israel. Miyad, it's like a pillar. Miyad halchu Yisrael v'akru brichim shebet batehem. So what did the Bnei Israel do? They got rid of their brichim. Right? Again, very passive. We're not going to do what they're asking us to do, but we're not going to cause any trouble. Od gazru, shekol mi sheyesh lo shor, yichtov al karno she'en l'sonei Yisrael, chelek b'elokei Yisrael, halchu Yisrael u'machru shorehem. If you have an ox, you have to write on the horns of the ox the same phrase, en l'sonei Yisrael, chelek b'elokei Yisrael. What do? They sell their shores. They don't want to take a stand. They don't want to have to do the action they're being told to do. They find a way out. Zera number three, od gazru alehem, shiyu bo'alim nishehen nidot, that they would have to sleep with their wives while their wives were nidah. Halchu Yisrael uparshu min nishehen. So what did the men do? They separated from their wives. Again, this more passive resistance, not taking an active stance. This is already three occurrences we see. We're coming to the fourth. The od gazru, shekol mi shenoseh isha tiba'el lehegemon tchila. That whoever, any woman who is getting married would first have to sleep with a hegemon, a different name for tfeisa that we saw earlier, but again, the same dua de senor, spending your marriage night with the ruler before with your husband. V'achar kach tachzor lebalan, then she would be allowed to return to her husband. V'nahagu b'davar hazeh shalosh shanim u'shmona chodashim. This continued for 3 years and 8 months. It's a pretty long time. It's a lot of brides. Eisenstein, Otsar HaMidrashim. It's a book he compiled, Midrashim, from all over. It's a book of Midrashim. Had shenas'a bito shel Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Until the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, she's not given a name here, just the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol was about to get married. Kevan shiratzu l'holicha etzel oto ha-hegemon. And when it was her turn to be brought to the ruler, pra'a rosha, she undid her hair, she messed it up, she tore her clothing, and she really disrobed herself, standing in front of them, naked. Her brothers, Yehuda and the other brothers, are furious with her. Take her out, burn her. We don't want the king to hear about this. We're all going to be in danger. She'iza panea liot aruma bifnei kol ha'am hazeh, that she dared to stand naked in front of this entire nation. Az amra, and she turns to them and says, He'achet bazeh lifnei achai v'ra'ai, v'lo et bazeh be'enei arel v'tamesh atem rutzim lim'obi. You're hypocrites. You're telling me that I'm daring to stand here debased in front of the nation, but you're okay with me going to debase myself in front of the ruler? What's going on here? V'olich oti lishkav etzlo, and you're going to bring me to sleep with him. Kevan sheshama Yehuda v'chavirav kach, when Yehuda and his friends heard this, no'azu yachdav laharog ha'hegemon, then they were spurred on to find a way to kill the hegemon. 3 years and 8 months, Shev, the Altasa, they're not doing anything. Finally, because of what their sister is doing to them, they're moved to action. Miyad kilbishu hanera bilbush malchut. They dress her up in royal finery. Asu chupashel hadas mibet hashmonai ad betosha hegemon. And they're bringing her under myrtle chupa until the house of the hegemon. Uba'im kol ba'alei nebel v'chinor ba'alei zemer v'hayu mezamrim u'merachdim ad shiba'u l'beit hegemon. And they're accompanying her with musical instruments. Kevan sheshema ha'hegemon kach, amar l'sara ba'avadav, ru'u otam shehem gdolei Yisrael. When the hegemon heard that they were arriving, he gets really excited. Look, they're from the gdolim, the VIPs of Yisrael, mizera Aharon ha'kohen, the descendants of Aaron. Kama hem smichim la'sot ritzoni. Look how happy they are to do what I'm telling them to do. Ru'uyim hem l'chavod gadol. They're worthy of great honor. V'tziva l'hotzi chutz sara ba'avadav. And he orders that all of his servants be brought out in order to make room for this entourage who are accompanying the woman. Nichnas Yehuda v'chaverav im achoto. Yehuda and his friends come in with his sister. Etzel ha'hegemon v'chatchu rosho u'bizazu kol asher lo. And they cut off his head and they take all of his spoils. And they really start crushing over the Yevanim. The Israel shayu ba'ir hayu baretet uberaad bishvil otam b'achor Yisrael. Everyone else in the city was panicking. What's going on here? What are these men doing? What's going to happen to all of us? Yatzah bat kol v'amra nitzchu talia da'azlu da'mayved prava v'antiochu v'chazru otam b'achorim. And a bat kol came out praising what the men had done. So the youths who were in the city, who had been panicking, are now coming back and doing tshuva, asku b'torah u'b'gemilut chasadim, and start learning Torah again. Kivan sheshama melech yevanim shehargu Yisrael hegemon shelo. And when the Greek king heard that the Greek ruler had been killed by the Jews, kavatz kol amo u'bal lifnei Yerushalayim v'vi oto b'matzor. He comes to Yerushalayim and starts a siege around it. V'nifchadu me'od ha'yudim, and the Jews were very scared. V'ayta sham isha almana yehudit shema, and in the city was a woman, an almana, yehudit. V'lakcha shifchata v'alcha etzel sharei Yerushalayim, and she goes to the gates of Yerushalayim. V'amra henifu oti latzet shema yaseh ha'makom nes al yedi. Let me go out. Let there be a miracle coming through me. Upatfu la v'yaksa, and they allowed her to go. V'halcha lifnei ha'melech, and she has an audience with the king. V'yomar la ma tevakshin, what do you want, he asks of her. V'ama, adoni, bat gedolim Yisrael anochi, v'achai nevayim v'shemati shehem mitnabim shemachar tipol Yerushalayim v'yadech. I'm the daughter of great people in Israel, and my brothers are prophets, and I heard that they are prophesizing, tomorrow Yerushalayim will fall in your hands. Kevan sheshama kach samach simcha gedola. Obviously, the king was happy to hear this. V'haya lo echad mechachamav shaya ro'e v'chozeh b'kochavim, v'haya omer ro'e anish Yisrael chozim b'tshuva v'iyat hayachol lahem. And there was one advisor to the king who said, this doesn't sound kosher to me. I see through the stars that they have just done tshuva, and you're not going to be able to withstand them. Chazor l'mkomcha, go home. V'nitmaleh ha'melech hema'alav v'tziva l'chotvo. And the king got very angry at his advisor and orders him to be snatched. V'asru yadav v'raglav liplot oto al ha'etz et Yerushalayim, and he commands that this advisor be hung up by his hands and his feet on a gallows outside Yerushalayim. ויאמר המלך מחר כשתיפול ירושלים בידינו נהרוג אותו. And we're going to kill him tomorrow when we take care of the rest of the city. היה המלך מאמין לאותה יהודית ויאהב אותה, ויאמר לה, רצונך שתנסי לי? He loved יהודית a lot and asked, do you want to marry me? ואמרה לו, אדוני המלך, איני ראויה אפילו לך מעבדך. I'm not worthy even of one of your servants. אמנם כיוון שליבך נוטה לזה, תעביר כרוז בכל המחנה, שכל מי שיראה שתי נשים הולכות אצל המעיין, אל יפגעו בהן. But if you really want me, fine. What's not implied here, but in other versions, is that she's asking first to go bathe herself appropriately, and she's asking the king to give a declaration if anybody sees two women going outside the gate at night, to leave them alone, not to do anything. So that I can go to the Ma'ayan, to the wellspring. Me'yad he'eviru hachroz va'asta kach, and the declaration went out. Va'asa ha'melch mishte gadol v'shato v'mishtero, and he made a great mishte celebrating A, that Yehudit was going to marry him, B, his anticipated victory over Yerushalayim the coming day. He had such a good time at his party, he drank too much. ואחר כך הלכו כל אחד ואחד לאוהליו, והמלך ישב בחיקה וישן. Everyone went home, and the king stayed behind with Yehudit and fell asleep on her chest. והלכה אותה יהודית, ונטלה סעיף שלו, יהודית comes, takes his sword, וחתכה ראשו, she takes, cuts off his head, ופשטה סדין עליו, and covers him with a blanket. והלכה עם ראשו של מלך אצל שערי ירושלים. And she takes the head in the Book of Judith version, she actually puts it in her basket. And she walks this way to the gates of Yerushalayim. ואמרה, פיתחו לי השערים. And she demands that the Jews guarding the gates let her in. Remember, they're scared. They don't know what's happening. There's a siege. They're expecting the worst. שכבר עשה הקדוש ברוך הוא נס על ידי. Hashem has already allowed a miracle to happen through me. אמרו לה, לא דייך שזנית וקלקלת, אלא שבאת בעלילה עמנו, מיד הראה להם ראשו של המלך. So right away they accused her, it's not bad enough that you prostituted yourself, that you brought yourself down to such degrading lows. But now that you're trying to fake us out with this plot, what do you mean? You're really trying to get us to open up the gates and you're going to let them in. Enough already. So what does she do? Here's my proof, and shows them the head. כיוון שראוהו פתחו השערים, so when they see the head beheaded, detached from the body, they open up the gates, ויצאו והרימו קול, and they raise voice, שמע ישראל, השם אלוקינו, השם אחד. כיוון ששמעו יוונים כך, אמרו למחרת באים עלינו, oh no, we know what this means, they're going to come and attack us tomorrow. והלכו למלך ומצאוהו בלא ראש, so they go in to get their king ready for battle, and lo and behold, they find the king, but not his head. Nafal aleihem imah b'pachad, they get very scared. Ubarchu kulam, and they run away. V'yirdfu Yisrael achareihem, v'hargu mehem kama v'kamen. Ben Israel run after them and kill many of them. Kach yaseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu nekama b'soninu mehera v'yachish lanu yeshua k'katuv uval l'tzion goel. In the same way, should Hashem bring nekama to our enemies and bring us quickly yeshua uval l'tzion goel. Okay, so for looking again, my thesis beforehand was in what way were the men passive and the women active, that we want to start saying that afhen hayu be'otahanes, that the geula really came. I think these two stories prove it. And again, there are two different traditions that have continued on. The tradition of Yehudit, as I said, the original version puts her almost in a fictional time, in a fictional place, but she's been put into the Hanukkah story to help show the role of women and how active they were. The daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, again, is often identified as Yehudit, as actually cutting off the head. In this case, we see her a little bit more on the side, but really it was her audacity that got the men active in a way that they hadn't been beforehand. But I saw a hand in the back. You had a question? I'm sorry, I thought somebody had raised her hand. Okay, so I began by describing that this was my journey to try and understand what the women were doing and to try and understand what our obligation is. Yes, you have a question. Not to the best of my knowledge. But I think there, as I said, in Sefer Maccabim, you do see these extraordinary women ready to take risks. I think the story of the Isha and Sheva Baneha shows to what extent she was willing to go forward and die for the cause and not let a mitzvah, even a mitzvah kala, it's a question whether it was eating pig, whether it was bowing down to idols, however you want to understand the story, she was willing to take a stand. What's interesting is that the story of the Isha and the Sheva Baneha appears in Perek number 7, chapter 7 in Maccabim Bet. In Perek Vav, right beforehand, there's a story about an Eliezer, a very important man, an elderly man who underwent the same ordeal. What I find fascinating is, I don't know, how many of you have ever heard before of this man who refuses to bow down, who's unkilled? How many of us have heard about the Chan of Sheva Baneha? It's like this named man who, it's usually, when you're given a name, you're usually from the upper echelons of society. Being Kung is a lot more covetic than just being tortured. So here he was hung and he has a name, but he's sort of fallen out of our knowledge, our Mesora, our Minhagim. And this woman, who's man, woman, Kohanim, she seems to be of a much lower level of society. She's unnamed, which again helps us to understand she's not as important. This unnamed woman has crept into our holiday stories time and time again. Part of that is that the stories were picked up during the Middle Ages, when there was a lot of martyrdom that was being done. So that story in Akedat Yitzchak became front and center as the Jews of that time tried to figure out what to do in the case of the Gzeirot versus eventual martyrdom. So I don't, that's not necessarily my point here, that I think that that's a way to go always. That's beyond what I'm able to say publicly. But yet, I think it's very fascinating how these stories have continued on. Right. So I don't know how much any of these were historical. He's collecting these midrashim. Correct. Yes. Were there harsh conditions then? Yes. What's interesting about the specific, the droit de seigneur, that's more of a Middle Age phenomenon than it is a Greek phenomenon. So that's why the stories that are mentioned in Maccabim more, refusing to bow down to idols, are the ones I think are more historically correct. But yet I just find it fascinating how much we're highlighting the role of women, whether it's a historical factor, whether, again, from the Middle Ages, it was put back into the Hanukkah story. We have stories of martyrdom. We're finding a source and a comfort for the time we're going in right now. Okay. Yeah. No. No. So the story of Judith is actually, there's a book, Sefer Yehudit. So the bottom half of the Midrash closely resembles the story of Judith. Again, she lived in Betulia in this different time, so they've switched the time to the time of the Evanim, switched her location to Yerushalayim. Correct. Yes. Okay, so what I think it's saying is that they're trying to force them to write something that will later get them into trouble. So it might be saying something that they're trying to rile up the Greeks, referring to the Greeks. That if they write this down, the Greeks are then going to get very upset at them. That's how I'm understanding it. Yeah. There are about 7 of them in existence. The one that I've read up the most is actually Maccabim Bet, which seems to have been written by a very pious Jew, as they say, somebody who was very frum, trying to show the frum attitude of the Jews at that time, that not all of them were mityavnim. Seems to have been that the original was in Hebrew, but the Hebrew has not survived. I can't speak authoritatively about any of the other books. This was really the one I focused on reading. But each one has a different author. And it was written most, I believe, as eyewitness accounts to what was going on, and becomes more of a historical idea of what was happening at the time. Again, we don't have a Megillat Esther. Tanakh was closed at that point. And this will give Josephus and other historians sources for what was happening when they were writing as well. Okay, so let's just go on our journey here today. We looked, first of all, for why women were obligated, first by discussing why they might not be obligated, the whole idea of a mitzvah taseh shehazman brama versus mitzvah taseh, and we saw that really all's up for grabs. It's really a mesorah. We have yesh v'yesh, mitzvot taseh that we don't have to do, and we have mitzvot taseh shelo shehazman brama that we are obligated in doing. We then looked at Hanukkah and decided that maybe it would be a mitzvot taseh shehazman brama, and it's derabanan, what happens? And we saw two other mitzvot falling into that category that all have the same title to them, av hen hayu ba'oto hanes, and then we extrapolated, what does it mean, hayu ba'oto hanes? Were they part of the gzeira? Were they part of the gula? And we've seen both sides as well. Why was Hanukkah considered different from Purim? The fact how much women were actually involved, whether with a war, whether with the gzeira. Though what I think that's interesting about the Midrashim, it's really putting women front and center. And then we looked at two specific Midrashim about women and about their involvement, and about really the role they played in Hanukkah. And it occurred to me that perhaps the best quote to finish this whole talk and this whole journey, the makom she'ein ish, hishtadel lihiyot isha. And with that, enjoy the holiday of Hanukkah.